This podcast is a product of the 4th and Inches Network,
a podcast network designed to keep Husky fans up to date on their favorite programs around UW.
Enjoy the show and go Dogs.
Go Dogs.
Go Dogs.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the 4th and Inches Network. This podcast covers the Washington Husky softball program with a little bit of baseball mixed in. This week, we have a very special guest on. He and I break down Washington's shocking series loss to Utah, Pac-12 Player Awards, preview a matchup between the top team in the conference against Washington, and break down how the Dogs can make key adjustments heading into post-play. Can UW bounce back into the top 10 before regionals? All of that is coming up here on Turn 2. Hello, Husky Nation. I am so excited to talk about this week, maybe not necessarily because of Washington and losing the series to Utah. We'll get to that, but we have some great announcements. But I also have a special guest. You know his name, you know his voice. He's somebody who is the reason why you're listening to this. So drum roll, please. We have with me Trevor Mueller, the co-owner, co-founder, 4th and Inches Husky Football Podcast. He wears many hats, but Trevor, this is your first time on Turn 2.
Yeah, and I'm really excited to be here. This was one of those projects that when we were thinking about putting the network together, I knew this would be a fantastic podcast, and listening to you host it and bringing on a new face and a new voice like Trey has been really cool to watch this thing grow.
Yeah, he's also been the reason why a few of my little edits have to get edited out towards the end when I can't figure out how to stop the recording. And I'm a boomer. Trevor's there to save the day.
And you know what? There hasn't been any for a while. So well done. It's good to see you. I've missed you. It's been a while since we've gotten to talk recorded or unrecorded. So this is great.
I know. And it's also great to have you on this because you're a baseball coach. Your team is in the playoffs right now. So huge accomplishments there. So I'm so excited to get your take on everything.
Yeah. I'm really, really excited. And of course the big news is some of the awards that have just come down. And these are names that if anybody's been listening to this for this season, these are names that are very well known by our fans.
And I think the biggest one, somebody that Trey and I talk about almost as if she's Sis Bates. And actually, it's pretty cool that this is an award that she has that Sis Bates did not get while at the University of Washington. She's Triple Crown and USA Today or USA Softball Collegiate Player of the Year finalist, Pac-12 leader in batting average, RBIs, home runs, slugging percentage, and total bases. The Pac-12 Softball Player of the Year officially goes to Bailey Klingler, second player ever in UW history with that honor.
Yeah, and she's one of those people, and I think we're going to get into it, just listening to what you guys have had to say. There's been some inconsistencies offensively throughout the ebb and flow of the Pac-12 season. There's not a lot of inconsistencies when it comes to Bailey.
Not even a little bit. And there is also, like you mentioned, other people getting recognized. All Pac-12 first team is Madison Husky, Bailey Klingler, Gabby Plain. All Pac-12 second team is Sammy Reynolds. All freshman team, three freshmen, which is great for such a young team, Kinsey Fiedler, Riley Holtroff, and Olivia Johnson. And then Bailey Klingler, she needs to, of course, have a triple all defense team as well.
Yeah, that's really awesome. And it, you know, you look at some of the people up top in the first team, and those are those are household names, right? And Gabby Plain, you know, getting her 3,000, was it 1,000 strikeout?
She had 3,000 strikeouts. I would keel over.
I saw that. It was a tweet about like a few years ago. It was Felix's 3,000th. No, her 1,000th strikeout at the university, and doing it in her dad with her dad in attendance is really, really cool. But you know, those are names, especially those two, that I think Husky fans from generations, when you ask them in 10 years who you watched play at the University of Washington, those are some of the names that are going to pop up.
And to kind of just be like frank about everything, I think Bailey almost got overshadowed by Sis Bates, especially her first few years. Sis Bates, there was gifts made out of her and videos, and she was a black hole at shortstop. She was so good. And Bailey was still there, but it wasn't until Sitz Bates left that I think she really shined brightest, just because she felt that, and I'm speaking for her now when I say she felt, but that the weight of the team was really put on her shoulders as the next leader, as a senior.
Yeah, for sure. And the thing about Sis Bates is, not only was Sis Bates a fantastic softball player, she was, she has very rare charisma that made her a household name, not just in the state of Washington, not just in the Pac-12 footprint, but, you know, all over. She was, she ended up being on like the all century team or all decade yeah. team or something like that. And as a current player, like, that is the gravity of how good of a shortstop she was, but also that's that transcends just the sport itself.
And I wouldn't be surprised if we see Bailey kind of follow in Sis Bates' footsteps in being a graduate assistant coach with the program. I know fans were probably more excited when Sis Bates announced she was joining the staff than when Jimmy Lake was first being announced as the head coach taking over Chris Peterson.
Right.
That was probably the most excited people have been for a coaching hire in a while.
Absolutely. And this one hopefully will turn out better than the one on the football side.
Let's hope. Fingers crossed.
It's hard to get worse.
Challenge accepted, Chief. Yeah. But we will talk about softball and kind of what happened over the weekend. Just had to get those honors out right away because I was so excited to talk about them.
Yeah.
Something else I was really, really excited about, and UW baseball. We talk about baseball just a little bit before we really dive into the softball program. And it's not because we don't love baseball. Everyone loves baseball. It's America's favorite pastime, but we want to have a baseball podcast. Still growing that Fourth and Inches network. So Trevor, we're going to have one by next spring, right? I always say, hopefully we will, but now I can ask the man himself.
I'm confident. We're working on that. Obviously you, as one of the co-founders and co-owners, is we're going to be working on that during the summer with Jake Grant, our other, the third piece to our trifecta.
Yeah, Jake is a busy boy himself. Couldn't get him on with us, but yeah. You're still great enough for both of you. So UW baseball sweeping the number 8 team in the nation, the UCLA Bruins, to close out their conference home games. This impressive sweep jumps the Dogs from 11th in the Pac-12 to 9th. And Trey and I were talking last week, and I will take full credit for this. Now you're welcome, UW baseball. I was saying that they're out of probably the running for the Pac-12 tournament as they were sitting there in 11th, but now they're only one spot away from getting the invite to go and play there. So Washington is now at 22-24 overall in the season, 11-16 in conference play, on top of, after the sweep, a win against Seattle U.
Yeah. And what a big deal. Cause, watching them, I watched them fight against Oregon a couple of weeks back. Then a couple of, you know, dropping some series where you have UCLA come in and Washington has its back against the wall. The season is really hanging in the balance, and you got the best team coming in. And, you know, the best teams like that, the top 10 teams are always going to have a target on their back. And, you know, watching this baseball team, the thing that I've appreciated the most about them is that they consistently put pressure on whoever they're playing. You rarely see them give up. I mean, what was the, how many runs were they down against Stanford the week before?
Yeah. Oh my goodness.
And you know, the thing that our head coach down here in Southwest Washington says is, tying run to the plate every inning, tying run to the plate when you're down. And you watched UW do that, and they've taken that momentum and they sweep UCLA to put them right back in contention to get into that first ever Pac-12 playoff spot.
And I was usually just going to go game one, game two, game three, quick recap, but you mentioned what that head coach saying and just tying run to the plate. So let's go to game three quickly, where the Huskies found themselves down 2-0, just 4 pitches into game three. Going into the bottom of the 9th, down 1, a 2-out McKay Barney single tied things up. Then Cam Clayton single sent another run across the plate. That ended up closing the books on a 4-3 Husky victory, sweeping of the Bruins. So like you were saying, tying run to the plate, that's exactly what happened for Washington.
Yeah, and you know, there's, when it comes to Lindsey Meggs and the job that he's done there since that run to the College World Series, There's been criticism, and I think some of it's warranted, where his recruiting classes sometimes haven't necessarily been where a team that comes from the college, you know, from the World Series would be at. Maybe it's development, you know, whatever. I've seen it all on Twitter and everything like that. But the thing that I can really appreciate about it is the culture and the fact that these, when they're 11th, when it's looking like there's no chance after after some of those losses early in the Pac-12 season, that they continue to be aggressive. And I think that that's something that is comes from the top, and then it gets into the leaders of the program. And if the leaders buy in, that's when everybody else buys in. And that's what I've seen is playing for with nothing to lose, and making sure that, you know, up until the last out, you're competitive, regardless of the score.
And I love having you on here to kind of talk about some of, you know, the just coaching and hitting and batting, and we'll dive a lot deeper into maybe some of the inconsistencies around the softball program. But baseball was seeming to be a little bit inconsistent with their bats all season. And then mm-hmm. you look at game one, what they did against the Bruins, and they ended up winning 7-1 with
right.
three, four home runs. So mm-hmm. you have the power to have those bats there. And even one of them was Michael Snyder. He jumped on a first pitch, driving the ball over the right. fence in center field to give the Dogs a 2-1 lead. And then in the sixth, he does it again for mm-hmm. a 3-run home run. So the bats are there. And then game two, winning 5-4. That's a pretty high scoring game compared to what Washington was doing earlier on in the season in conference play. So is it just kind of getting the hang of things a little bit too late, or Lindsey Meigs making the adjustments needed? Because this is against a number 8 team. It's not against right. a Montana State. We'll go with Montana. Yeah. I knew you'd like what I did there.
Yikes. So I think a part of it is when you get to some of these programs and like you look at across the conference, the pitching staffs are talented. Waiting for a Division I pitcher to make a mistake is tough. So I think what a trend that I've seen is them starting to just hunt fastballs. And when especially in spots where, and I don't have scouting reports in front of me or anything like that, but if you have a pitcher who is known to try to get a fastball over for a strike to get up in the count, which is, I mean, that's what we teach.
That's what I do on the show. Yeah. I'm playing yeah. MLB The Show, and it makes TJ so mad because we'll be playing and I just fastball down the middle every time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It gets you ahead, and that's what you want to do. But if you're locked in and you're able to be aggressive on that first pitch or whenever you see that get me over fastball, if it's not necessarily located exactly where in a hittable place, that's when Washington can take advantage. Cause I mean, honestly, if you have some of these pitchers who are especially like, you know, the staff in UCLA, if their stuff is sharp, it's really hard to hit, even if you know what pitch is coming. So if they're missing their spots a little bit and you're aggressive, that's a recipe for success. And then, you know, when it comes to some of these, you know, that 4-3 win at the end of this, in the ninth, you look at that and that's battling all game. Whoever their starter was, I don't have the name in front of me, was pitching well, hitting their spots, probably mixing up speeds on Washington. And it's coming down to believing that you can hit and, you know, hoping that the ball is kind of where you think it's going to be, and let the ball go where it may.
Yeah. Especially it being such a mental game, going down 2-0 after 4 pitches. So it's not a good look. They stayed 100%. In it. They battled back and it paid off, as not only did they get the sweep against UCLA this week, a top 10 team in the country, but getting that series win against Stanford, top 10 yeah. team in the country last week as well. And that's why now They are on the road against USC, who are sitting in last place in the Pac-12. Good news for Washington, but they've been struggling against the bad teams. Yeah. And USC has an 8-16 record in the conference, 24-21 overall. Game times are Friday the 13th, at 7 p.m., Saturday the 14th at 1 p.m., and Sunday the 15th at 12 p.m. Huge games because, kind of like we mentioned, if Washington wants to make a run towards that Pac-12 tournament and get that final spot there in the tournament, they got to get some wins.
Yeah, and I mean, riding high off of winning those two series, I mean, this is the best time to do it. And you got to think that they're in, I mean, I can tell you they're in postseason mode. This is just a week early.
Exactly. And someone who's also in postseason mode, but maybe a little bit too early, as Washington took some shocking losses. Softball is what we're talking about now, and lost the series on the road against the Utah Utes this past weekend before winning game three to avoid the sweep. The Huskies dropped its first games against Utah since 2019. So this puts the Dogs at 34-13 on the season, 13-8 in conference play, keeping them in third place behind ASU and UCLA. So what a shocker of events.
Yeah, you didn't really see that coming, especially after some of their wins against, I go all the way back even to the Oregon sweep, and then the sweep of Stanford, which I know that you were a little pessimistic going into that series.
And I just have to call a loss every, this is the, I think, one of two sweeps I've called all season, and both of them have resulted in series losses. So,
yeah. So, you know, going into that, I was kind of thinking that Washington had kind of figured out, I'm not going to call it necessarily a slump, because I think some of the issues was also in the circle, but there was definitely I guess a surprise factor, right? When you don't lose to a team since 2019, I mean, that's an expectation of a win, especially with a top 10 ish kind of team like Washington. But you know, that inconsistency kind of came back to bite them, I guess.
And inconsistency, one of the biggest things that has been talked about all season, especially between Trey and I, is the pitching and how inconsistent the pitching has been. Gabby Plain, somebody who you talked about almost getting her 3,000 strikeout. She struggled in game one against Utah, giving up 5 runs. In game three, she got the start, tossed 6 innings, only allowed 1 run and 5 strikeouts. But at the end of the day, giving up 5 runs as a starting pitcher who is going to be pitching in 2 of the 3 games in the series, that's just, it's so inconsistent to her, kind of pitching shutouts after shutout after shutout.
Yeah. And the thing about Gabby Plain is, you know, when you think of Gabby Plain, you think of like the run last year where she was very, very unhittable at times. And even this year where she's really, I think, battled some of those inconsistency issues that we saw, whether it's, she's been in the Pac-12 forever, it seems like now. And not necessarily an overpowering pitcher, that could also be where, you know, you have to make sure you hit your spots. And if those rise balls are left out in the middle of the plate and they don't rise how they're supposed to, those are gone. That's a batting practice pitch.
One of the hardest pitches to hit now becomes one of the easiest.
100%, because it's just a slow ball right down the middle. So, I think that's gotta be part of it, is, she has to be sharp, and obviously in game three she was. But when each game matters, especially against a team that you should be able to take care of to, you know, hopefully get a home spot when it comes to postseason play, it's really disappointing.
Especially, I love that you brought that up, because say Washington did sweep Utah, and we'll talk about kind of UCLA and ASU a little bit later, just in terms of where they are in terms of record conference play, because that's the difference now between Washington fighting for first, second place now, instead of pretty much being locked in third place in the Pac-12, and has now fallen out of the top 10. Mm-hmm. And aside from Gabby Plain, who's a fifth year senior, she's being celebrated this weekend, is Pat Moore as well. Pat Moore came into the bottom of the seventh in game three and was able to record the final three outs to secure the win. But she was also somebody who has been pretty inconsistent overall in the circle. And getting you on here, and I love picking your brain, especially as a baseball coach, we'll throw softball in there. Just there's a ball, there's a bat, and there's a glove.
Sure.
But having such little depth and inconsistencies in the pitching circle with some of the relievers or backups or closers, how big of an issue or a concern is that going into postseason play?
I think it's really big. I mean, you look at, 2009 with Daniel Lorre, like when you have a generational play, a talent like that, you can kind of get away with, whatever you have behind. And softball, you think, well, if you have one starter, you can go and you can ride them through the entire postseason. Well, yes and no. Because the thing is, yeah, you can pitch as many pitches as you want underhand as humanly possible. But these are high leverage games. Every at bat is a high leverage at bat. Every pitch is high leverage. And so although it might not be work on your shoulder, that is mentally exhausting. And be able to have somebody or a staff behind that is capable of getting outs is really, really, really important. And you see it all the time. I mean, in those high leverage games, if I can remember when they were playing Florida a few years ago,
yeah.
Florida was struggling and they brought in their reliever and she was fantastic. So I guess for, when it comes to that, depth is so important. You know, you can always say you're one injury away or anything like that, but if somebody's not sharp in a high leverage game, if you don't have anybody behind them, you're kind of hanging them out to dry a little bit.
Yeah. And backups such as, Brooke Nelson, we talk about her a lot, or Kelly Lynch, people who will get the start in game two, sometimes will have an 11 strikeout day. Yeah. And then there will be times where they can barely get the ball across the plate. Yeah. So, factor what it is, whether it's experience at the collegiate level or just still young and working on kind of perfecting your pitching. I just don't see, if Washington makes it through regionals and super regionals into the World Series, how they can be super competitive to rely on the inconsistency in pitching, because I feel like bats can only carry you so far.
Yeah. You have to be able to pitch at the next, in that next level, like major division one, Pac-12 softball, some of the best softball in the country. And so, these younger pitchers who are looking to start in game two, be that relief pitcher, it is hard. It's a transition, even this far into the season. Even I'm unsure of how long they've been in the program, but playing high level teams like this are some of the best in the country. And even Utah has to be competitive there. That's every team in this league for the most part can play.
Yeah. If you're a D1 softball player, you're good.
100%. And if you leave stuff out, it's going to get hit. It doesn't matter if you're first team. It doesn't matter if you're the third pitcher. So I think that, kind of to sum it up is you have to, it's part of the maturing process to get knocked around a little bit. But at this point in the season, if they're not sharp, I think Heather Tarr has to have a pretty short leash make sure that you give, the offense a chance, especially coming up against Arizona State. That's, you told me before the show, now they're a top five team. So the margin for error for Washington to salvage a game or to sweep is going to be very thin.
And I think that's kind of why I came to the conclusion of about of a C minus, nothing crazy to kind of write home about in terms of pitching, but it's just the inconsistency makes me grade them so much worse. And if we want to tie it back to football, the inconsistency of the quarterback sometimes, or is Dylan Morris going to throw for four touchdowns or four interceptions. We don't know.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. And it doesn't matter. You can have as a quarterback, pitcher. It's the most valuable position on the field. I mean, in football, obviously you have to have an offensive line that can block for him, but that makes the pitcher, even especially in softball, the most important player on the field.
Yeah, and one bad day equals a loss, unfortunately, most of the time.
You can have Bailey Kingler, you can have Sis Bates, you can have whoever you want in the field, but if the ball is, you know, the over exit the velocity of 80 miles an hour and it's hitting the wall or going over the fence, there's nothing your shortstop can do about it.
Unfortunately, just watch it go over is all, exactly. they can do. And kind of speaking of just batting and great bats all around, somebody that we talked about getting those postseason, or not even postseason honors, but just all Pac-12 first team honors, Madison Husky is really, really, really coming around with her bat. She was kind of quiet, and it seems that as Bailey Klingler has kind of died off towards the end of, or the halfway point of Pac-12 play and as a whole, Madison Husky, she just sent her 13th home run of the season in game two over that left field wall. She ended up cutting Utah's lead to 3 and making it 5-2. And unfortunately, that was only 2 runs in that game. But just the consistency of her bat has gotten 10,000 times better as conference play has gone on.
Yeah. And I mean, it's she's got the coolest last name on the team.
Could she really go anywhere else?
You can see Washington's at other places, but going Husky, it would be weird seeing that in the crimson and white or something.
I was going to say, imagine she'd be like the most hated like softball player in Wazoo.
Yeah, for sure. but you know, that's what you need is you need some of your player. You have your, most teams have 3 or 4 hitters that are good teams. They have 3 or 4 hitters that are going to do the bulk of the damage. And what teams need to be successful on postseason runs is they need other people to start playing better, hitting, making, and I'm not sure exactly where Madison, well, she's a first teamer. She's one of those people. You have to have those players play well in order to have a chance to win the game. And when you go forward, that's when you need some of those role players to come up with big hits.
And with your team, when you coach, how do you kind of, I don't want to say kind of give their momentum back when they're struggling hitting one day, but how can Washington, we mentioned Bailey Klingler being quiet a little bit lately, how can you rely or get the batters who are maybe in like the 7, 8, 9 positions to really step up?
Well, some of that, and you go about it, actually, what I would do is go about it in 2 very different ways. When it comes to Bailey, somebody who squares the ball up a lot and hits for power, a lot of times what you're going to do with them is to flatten their swing, not flatten their swing back out as in make it where, but work on coming through the baseball, hitting the top half, giving it that backspin that's going to carry the ball out of the ballpark. When it comes to some of the players that you're looking to put the ball in play to put pressures on defenses, what you're going to be looking to do is either set up some of those breaking, your pitching machines to give those breaking pitches that that are harder to hit, you know, the rise balls that we're talking about, and working on even things, fouling those off, getting rid of those pitches to finally see a ball that you can do some damage with, and putting the ball in play, hitting the top half of the baseball. Those are your line drives. Those are your hard hit ground balls. And those are what find holes during games.
And Jen Cummings is somebody who has kind of gotten her bat around as well. She actually got her first home run of the season in game 2 over the left field wall as well. Sorry, my kitty has to scream because she has to be a part of every podcast. And cut Utah's lead, but she also had a double in game 3 to set up Bailey Klingler's home run. So she's now on a 5-game hitting streak, which is huge for the bottom of the lineup going in, as you were saying, is to maybe not crush it like some of the 1, 2, 3, 4 power hitters do, but just to get on base.
100%. I mean, those are the people that get and pitch count, even if pitch counts don't matter like they do in baseball, pitch counts still matter. And more, the longer those at bats are for some of those lower players in the lineup, the better. And then when those come through, that's when you can start to see crooked numbers go up in the run column.
And then Pat Moore, somebody we also have to talk about as well. Outside of the pitching circle, she just recorded her first career hit as a Husky in the sixth inning of game three. So that tied the game. And she also, or in game two, that tied the game, also recorded her second and third at bats of the season. So having a pitcher in softball who can also bat, pretty rare in college. Does that, I mean, I know she's a fifth year senior, so it doesn't really matter too much next season, but just getting her involved, what does that do for her?
I mean, when staying engaged in a game is, softball does a fantastic job, and baseball does too. Just
you like softball better. I'm going on record.
They do such a good job of keeping everybody engaged, and that's such a hard thing to do, especially in a game where, you know, there's not a clock. There's players that aren't going to play, but there's always jobs to do for everybody in the dugout. And so even with that, being able to get in the batter's box to contribute offensively, it just helps you on another level. It gives you even more skin in the game. It gives you and it gives you another task to focus on. I think it's fantastic.
And hopefully off of some bad pitches. But 100%. One other one we got to talk about, we mentioned earlier, Bailey Klingler, we can officially say it, Pac-12 yep. softball player of the year, hit her 22nd home run of the season. And to make that 1-2-1 game, 3-1 before Washington went on to win that final game of the series to avoid the sweep, she extended her Pac-12 leading home run number to 22 on the season. And she's also hit safely in 5 straight games. So maybe she's kind of getting hot again at the right time towards the end and moving into postseason play.
Yeah, it's funny that, you know, she's cooled off a little bit and then she goes on a 5-game hit streak. Like, I think that when it comes to her baseline is just different from a lot of different players, that if she's not impacting every game, it's kind of weird.
Do you think postseason they continue to pitch to her? Or do you think given a situation, they maybe consider walking her a little bit more often?
Oh yeah. It's situational. Softball is going to come into play there, but if you don't have to pitch to Bailey Klingler, you don't do it.
Don't do it. Word of advice, don't do it.
Yeah. You know, you have a free base, you know, any team, if you're going up, you're never going to do it in a way that gives you a defeatist mentality. If you're the opposition, if there's a runner on first base, you're not going to walk her to get to somebody else. But, you know, I think that she's not going to necessarily see a ton of hittable pitches in an at bat. And especially if there's an open base, you're not going to see her getting any fastballs. You're going to see a lot of junk and stuff that if she's going to try to make contact, she's probably going to have to extend her strike zone, which is never a good idea.
And I'm going to give you a scenario here. I know we're tacking a little bit longer than usual, but how often do I get to have you on turn
two? This is awesome.
I know, not often, right? So situation here for you then. It's, let's call it, you know, postseason, maybe regionals or super regionals, and bases are loaded. Bailey Klingler comes up. You have no outs. Do you intentionally walk or do you risk getting a couple more runs in?
No, you have to pitch to her.
Got to pitch to her.
Yeah. It, as a coach, you don't want to, but you're also telling, as a other coach, you're like, look, we're here. You have gotten us here. We're going to challenge her because I think that you're better than her. And that's what they're going to say. And hopefully they're wrong, but
this is why you're a coach.
Yeah. 100%. You're going to go up there and you're going to have your scouting report and you're going to make sure that you do what you can to put your kid in the best position. But when it's 3-2, you're going to challenge her. And you're just at that point, you kind of wash your hands as a pitcher, as a hitter, as coaches. She's either going to hit it or she's not.
Yeah.
And that's how you're going to see it play out. And it, you know, it's funny how baseball and softball work, that in those big spots, you see those people come up, and sometimes they come through and sometimes they don't. And that's what
sometimes you get a grand slam right on top of the roof down in Oregon.
100%. Exactly. And you sweep Oregon, which was just fantastic. So
fantastic. I'm sure the missus was happy about that too.
My in-laws are Oregon season ticket holders for softball, so they saw it happen in person. So yeah, my father and I was like, hey, she's pretty good. I was like, hey, yeah, she is.
You're so. Like, oh, what are you talking about? She's a true freshman.
Exactly. So I think that, yeah, I that's what the postseason is. You have the best teams from around the country, all know they're good. And, yeah. You know, Gabby Plain's not going to do that to fill in the blank somebody else. You're going to expect her to strike her out or hit into a double play or what have you.
And that's kind of why I like having you on, is to talk about those situations and what can happen, because there will probably be a time in postseason if Washington makes it that we see something like that.
Oh, it's a great question. Yeah.
Well, thanks. See, yeah. Pumping my tires. You're on one show. And so previewing this upcoming week, because it's huge. The number 12 Dogs, who have dropped out of the top 10, which we talked about after the disappointing showing against Utah, hosts the number 4 team in the country, the ASU Sun Devils, for UW Senior Night Series. ASU is sitting at an impressive record of 37-8 overall and 18-3 in the conference. That puts them 2 games ahead of UCLA after they won the UCLA series this previous weekend and in first place in the Pac-12. Game times are Thursday at 7 p.m. Thursday the 12th. So you won't see them on Sunday. Friday the 13th, another there at 5 p.m. and Saturday the 14th at 1 p.m.
Yeah. And I mean, they've lost 3 games, but those 3 games, they lost 2 to Stanford, who Washington took care of. And then they dropped 1 to UCLA. So the good teams can beat them. And Washington has shown they're a good team. Was the Utah series a hiccup, or was that some of the inconsistencies rehashing at a very, very inopportune time for this program?
A little bit of A, a little bit of B.
But
Arizona State, kind of like I mentioned, does enter the top 5 for the first time after that thrilling series win over number 8 UCLA, who is now number 8 in Tempe. So that was a huge victory for the Sun Devils, who probably have secured the number 1 spot in the Pac-12, depending on how this series goes and how UCLA does. But Arizona State's head coach, Trisha Ford, was just named the Pac-12 Softball Coach of the Year, including 8 of her players to the all-conference team. So this is a very, very good team to close out the conference series.
Yeah, but the thing that really helps this team is it's senior weekend, which is going to be a big deal with some of the iconic names moving on after this season.
I looked into seeing how much tickets were and have the availability for them, and last week as of Friday they were sold out.
Nice.
And the cheapest ticket on a Friday for one person, not with a group of 2 or 3 or whatever, was $82. So
holy cow, people
want to see Gabby Plain and her what might be final homestand.
Yeah, and you know, glass half full. If they win that series, that puts them back in the top 10, and then you could be looking at a regional at home.
Fingers crossed. Gotta see Bailey Klingler one more time at home, hit one into Montlake. But kind of talking about top players to watch for Arizona State, and I'm not going to go through and pick all 8 of them who are named. Yeah, hope you guys got another hour. You're going on a little mini road trip for someone's graduation.
Right.
Longer than the first Harry Potter book, but I'm going to kind of talk about 3 players, and between each one, I kind of want to get your opinion on maybe the type of player or what to expect or how to really kind of face this person. If you're all good for that one.
Sure.
Perfect. So first one is going to be true freshman Sydney Sanders. She leads the Sun Devils as a true freshman. So we're joking about, you know, Bailey Klingler being a true freshman. We actually have one with 17 home runs. That's a lot for a true freshman. Mm-hmm. And she also leads the team with 53 RBIs. Her slugging percentage is a 982, which is 2nd in the conference and 4th in the country. She's on an 11-game streak of reaching base at least once per game. So this is actually the true freshman version of Bailey.
Right. Right. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And I think that you look at the home runs, she's on an 11-game hitting streak. Do you have her average in front of you?
Her average is something insane. It was, I believe, a 4.69.
So not only is she, here's the problem with her, not only is she hitting the ball out of the ballpark, she's also using, she's using the field. So these are the hardest people to get out that can hit for power, but also hit for average. So, you know, for Gabby, especially somebody who's not going to overpower somebody with a high fastball, what you're going to need to, what I would think would be good is to live low and just hope that her hands drop down below the ball and that she ends up hitting the bottom half of the ball for those nice, easy pop-ups for the infielders or shallow outfielders. But you know, those are, she's going to, with an average like that, where she's getting off 46% of the time or whatever you said, you know, that's, you're going to have to make sure you limit the damage around her.
Yeah, what you wouldn't give to have her on your high school team right now.
Holy cow.
But overall, probably the top offensive player to watch for ASU. Yeah. So we'll see how Gabby Plain and them decide to work around the zone with her. Another one in terms of an offensive player is Yanni Acuna, who has 16 multi-hit games this season. Her stats on the season, I think, is what's really impressive. Not as impressive as a true freshman's, but this is the second best hitter on the team. She has a 4.23 average and an 8.65 slugging percentage.
Yeah, I mean, they're just getting on base at an insane rate, right? Like, when you're talking about hit 42% of the time, she's hitting. That doesn't account for her on base percentage is going to be higher based on her slugging percentage. So you're talking about somebody who's on base multiple times a game. So again, it's going to have to be making sure that you force her to hit, but not hit the balls that she wants to hit. And that's going to come down to, I don't have it in front of me. If she's a slapper, I don't see her home run totals, but if she's one of those people who relies more on her legs, you know, trying to, you know, give her that outside pitch that sends it right to the third baseman. If that's how she plays, do you know how she plays?
I know she usually is just a slugger, so she doesn't really slap.
Oh, she's a slugger. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well then again, you just try to live low and hope that, the hands sink below the ball.
Yeah, it's a dangerous top of the lineup for ASU, that's for sure. Okay, and yeah. UCLA's win did come off of Acuna not having a good day at the plate. So, yeah.
Well, and that's what you hope for is you catch them usually with people that are hitting the ball hard like that. It's usually because they're below the ball. And so those deep fly balls are gone if they start hitting the middle of the softball.
Love having you on. Love it. And so another one is in the circle. So yeah. She is a terrifying pitcher, Lindsay Lopez. Holy she leads God. The Sun Devils with a 1.48 earned run average, only giving up 28 runs in over 80 innings pitched this season. And she's allowed only 7 home runs on the season. So those are some wild non-human numbers.
Yeah, I mean, has she been named the pitcher of the year in the conference yet?
I believe she was, yes.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I mean, looking at that stat line is pretty impressive.
I think, and it was only like 56 hits in those 80 innings, so even when they do get hits off of her, only half come across the plate.
That is wild. You're looking at 28 runs. That's like a run every 4 innings. Is that right? Is that my math correct? Like, when it comes here,
it's
here's
just insane
thing.
Right?
Like, yeah here's the good news is Gabby Plain,
please enlighten me, because so, I'm not sure the good news here.
Glass half full. Gabby Plain's capable of doing that in a series. Gabby Plain is capable of doing that in a game where she gives up no, where she throws, where she throws a shutout. This tells me that Washington should be able to muster a run in a game. You have the hitters to do it. that tells me that there's going to be a lot of pressure on the pitching staff to make sure that they shut down or limit or Arizona State to allow this team to scrape 1 to 3 runs a game.
And do you think, and we'll get into our predictions, but say Washington drops game one, and we'll go ahead and just say Lindsay Lopez is going to pitch games 1 and 3. Is Washington's best opportunity to not get swept going to be game two?
Probably. What I guess I would be thinking is, what's the difference between scrounging a game against Arizona and being swept? Because it sounds like if you're in that position, you're out of contention to host a regional. And your seeding, you're still going to be in the postseason. Your seeding could be worse. So you probably want to go ahead and win that game. So I think that, Heather Tarr is going to have to get creative to try to salvage one of those games. And if that is, throwing plane out again, in that second game, got to figure out how to win one.
Do it. Some fun facts before we kind of really move on to how Washington can get a win and what's at stake is, and maybe not fun facts for Washington fans listening, but fun facts for some Arizona State fans is Sun Devil softball is 31-0 when scoring more than 6 runs in a game this season.
Yeah.
And they are also 4th in the nation in home runs per game with an average of 2 per game. So depending on situations and how loaded some of those bases are, that's going to be a, it's going to be a rough go.
Yeah, that's the 31-0 with six runs. I believe that, especially with looking at Lopez's lines. But the shock, 2 home runs a game average, that means that there was games, I'm sure there's games where they didn't hit any. So that means there was a few games where they hit a lot of home runs.
There's like 7 in one game. The team just cries.
Yeah, exactly. They get 8 run ruled by just home runs. So
yeah,
I think that just like, if I'm going to stay with the averages of looking at her giving up a run ish every 4 innings, that means that Washington has to make sure if they hit those 2 home runs in the game that there's nobody else on base.
I love that. And moving on to how Washington can get a win, aside from what you just said with making sure that there's no one else on base on those home runs, and you talk about Heather Tarr needing to be creative, how else can they get a win? Because I think that bats need to be some of the best they've been all year. If they want to take Lindsay Lopez a little bit out of the equation, if they want to make up for some of the hits that Sydney or Yanni's going to draw, I think bats need to be very, very, very good.
Yeah. And that's going to come down to the fact that a quality of bat doesn't always end up with somebody on base. I think that top to bottom 1 through 9, they have to put together, 6 to 7 quality at bats per 9.
I thought you were going to say inning and Hazard and that.
No. And of course, a quality at bat, the way that a lot of that we do it, it can be an at bat that lasts 6 pitches, where a runner is moved, or a ball hit hard. I mean, hard hit balls that are caught are still quality at bats. And I'm talking about a one hopper to the shortstop. That I don't care how hard you hit that. It's not a good, it means you're in front of it.
It's not good.
No, yeah, exactly. Put it through the hole.
You would make me cry as a coach. No, I'm kidding. Most of my players, that was like, a really hard hit ball. That was not good.
Yeah. But you know, free bags on walks, getting on base however you can, keeping pressure on Lopez and on the defense. If you're able to do that for a full 7, you're always going to have a chance offensively.
Yeah. My dad always says that a walk's as good as a hit.
100%.
And pitching, we talked about pitching needing to be top notch, but overall I would just like to see a little bit more consistency, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, she's so freaking crafty. Like, she's such a good pitcher.
Yeah, been in the Olympics twice.
Exactly. And so her going out and spinning a gem is, I mean, still even at this point where she's been knocked around a little bit more, I still expect it. I still expect a shutout. I still expect, you know, upper single digits in Ks. I expect her to create weak contact. So, man, I think it's doable just because your best players are your most experienced players, and that's always a good thing.
Exactly. And ASU does have a veteran heavy team. Washington has a very young team. And yeah, like Trey and I kind of talked about, the smallest roster since Heather Tarr first took over with only 14 players. Mm-hmm. So quite the difference there. But what is at stake? Final conference series of the year. ASU in first with 18-3 on the season in conference play. UCLA is in second, 16-5, taking on a very winnable Cal team. And UW in third place with 13-8. UW cannot take first now, no matter what happens. But if UCLA gets swept and UW sweeps, would tie for second. However, tiebreaker would go to UCLA for beating UW with the series and getting that sweep. But it's not really about winning for the conference, kind of like you mentioned. It's all about regional seeding.
Yep. Yeah, and I mean, just based on that, I mean, how annoying is it that they dropped three to Cal early in the season?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I called the sweep on that one too.
Yeah, 100%, as did everybody, because they're non-conference. They played some of the best teams in the country and beat them. So that was a little bit of a red flag. They're definitely not. I mean, they have no chance of being the number two seed. And that's fine. The goal is to get in, back into that top 10 and hopefully have a regional there on Montlake.
Fingers crossed. And so going in, what is your prediction for this very tough matchup? I know you're looking, this was your favorite part, is guessing the prediction.
I do love me a good prediction.
Who's going to be half as glass full? Who's going to be half as glass empty?
Well, as the idea, I'm an idealist. I think
some things never change.
Yeah. Yeah. I picked Washington to lose to Michigan, I'm pretty sure. So, I was in good. I was.
I'm pretty sure you picked 64-0 against Montana too.
Yeah, it was bad. So, I think that Washington can take two of three. But as somebody who's gonna really working on maybe not being such a homer, I'll probably say they'll go 1-2.
I would absolutely agree with you. I think that they do go 1-2, and I think that one's gonna come in game two. It will not be game one, and hopefully it doesn't come down to game three, because my life expectancy cannot take that.
Yeah. I mean, you dropped the first two, especially depending on how they go. I don't expect a team with the coaching staff that they have and the plane in the circle and Kingler to necessarily allow a team to not be competitive. So regardless of how it goes, I think that they're going to have to shot. They're going to have a shot to win every game. I mean, they're still around a top 10 team, and top 10 teams can beat anybody. So I think they get a win.
We've seen what happens in March Madness. Is it going to be May Madness as Washington does host the ASU Sun Devils? We will find out. And Trevor, I cannot thank you enough for coming on. And it's been so much fun. I miss you.
Yeah, I miss you too.
But good luck with your team in playoffs. Hopefully we get a report back with a state title. So,
hey,
yeah, we're putting it into the universe.
There you go.
Manifesting it. We'll manifest a 1-2 series for Washington as well.
I would love that.
Perfect. Well, until next time, and hopefully we got some great news to report back to you as we kind of talk about regionals whenever we do get back to having those games. And until then, I'm Kayla Olin.
I'm Trevor Mueller.
Go Dogs.
Go Dogs.